Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, friends. Welcome to another session of Ask Dr. Rhonda. I am your host, Dr. Rhonda Waters, CEO of Mutare Hypnosis, where we help ordinary people create extraordinary lives. Please feel free to like Mutare Hypnosis, LLC, on Facebook. We're located at 60 State Street, Boston, or around the globe by Skype. Look us up on mutarehypnosis.com. That's mutarehypnosis.com. Or you can email us at info@mutarehypnosis.com. If you're struggling to stay motivated toward a weight loss, an academic, or a stop-smoking goal, we can help. Work, life, social career stressing you out, can't sleep, hypnosis can help. No medication side effects involved. Call 617-266-3057 or email info@mutarehypnosis.com. Our guest today is Gary Bailey, who's a professor of practice at Simmons College, which is in the greater Boston area. It's a tremendous college. He's an associate professor there. Thank you for being on the show today, Gary.
Delighted to be with you.
I'd like you to start with, then we'll go into a little bit more about you, but can you tell people how they might wind up actually connecting with a social worker? What do social workers do in the general public?
Well, Dr. Rhonda, social workers, professional social workers, provide services and practice in a wide variety of settings, including foster care agencies, community action centers, hospitals, government offices. There are many social workers, for example, who work for politicians as constituent service officers. We provide services in mental health centers. We're the largest provider of mental health services in the country, in the United States. But we also work in homeless shelters, schools, and so we're everywhere. We're also elected officials. About 15 members of Congress are social workers. The longest-serving woman in the Senate, Senator Barbara McCluskey, is a social worker, an MSW social worker from the University of Maryland. So we are everywhere.
Well, I appreciate your sharing the breadth of that. I think a lot of people don't understand that they might be interacting with a social worker in a lot of situations, or that there are social workers there especially trained to help people in certain situations. So I really appreciate your sharing a little bit about that. Perhaps now might be a good time for me to bring up, my mother was a social worker. So I have a little vested interest in that. She worked at the Solomon Fuller Mental Health Center over here at BU.
Great place.
And so I have a little knowledge, nothing, you know, like a regular professional would know, but I have a little knowledge about the breadth of things. And a lot of regular people don't think they're having interactions sometimes with social workers, in fact, actually are. So I think it's important people to recognize that it doesn't mean necessarily that you're having a problem or a trouble. It could be someone helping you, like you say, with a foster care or adoption or politics or other areas that people might realize that you, a social worker, might be there to help guide you through the process of whatever it is you're working through. Gary, will you tell us a little bit about how you got into the field of social work?
Well, that's an interesting story. I was a student at Tufts University, undergraduate, and had been pre-med. My parents had put in my head from a young child that I was going to be a doctor, and my younger brother was going to be an attorney. He went on to become an attorney. And I took a course one winter during intersession, taught by a woman here in the Boston area named Jane Greenspan, who was a social worker. And in that course, I found myself. I understood that what she talked about in terms of what she did was what I wanted to do, and quite honestly was what I had in some ways been doing. I'd been the person that my friends would come to and tell me their secrets, and I knew to hold them. So I was respecting confidentiality. If people needed advice, I could offer them advice or help them to get to the solution that they needed for themselves. So it was the skill set that I just naturally seemed to have. And so I applied to BU School of Social Work, was accepted, And the rest is history. And I have never regretted the decision that I made. I think physicians are amazing people, but I really wanted to be someone who was both clinically trained but also committed to social justice and social change. And that's what I get to do as a social worker.
I think people should do a little research on Gary Bailey and find out that the breadth also of your social interactions or professional interactions across the country, around the globe, really. Sometimes people think if you work, like, say you're a professor of practice at Simmons College, they think you're there all the time. I think you're traveling more than you're at school. You're constantly in places providing meaningful input. So, I mean, I think sometimes people think that that your job title is what we think you are, but there are many, many other things that you're doing. So I encourage people to look you up and find out a little bit more about you, as well as, you know, being on the show. And I also appreciate your sharing that, and I've been talking to people about this for some time, that some people miss their calling, if you will, or they don't double back to it because they think they've got a path set down in front of us. But things we're trying to do in our real lives might, in fact, be the career we're supposed to be in. So even though you had no intention of becoming a social worker, when you saw it, you recognized, ooh, that's for me. But if you hadn't gone to that intercession course, you might have gone off to medical school and done other things and been sitting in, you know, and been, I'm sure, a brilliant doctor, but, you know, this was your option to do something else. So I think some people need to recognize that they might have an additional calling, or maybe they're finished in one field and it's time to move into another. How does a person get trained to become a social worker?
Well, there are several ways that one can do that. One can start out in undergraduate school, taking courses that would afford one to have a bachelor's in social work. And there are a number of schools, Simmons included, that offer a bachelor's in social work or BSW. Then one would also then have to go on to get a MSW or master's in social work, which is traditionally a two-year course of study full-time. And focusing on core curriculum topics such as social policy, understanding the dynamics of racism and oppression and other diversities, human behavior in the social environment, and also practice, and to really kind of get grounded in the profession and the professional values and the ethics of the profession. And then also, after someone has received their MSW, after a few years, I always recommend to my former students that they go out and do some work and get some lived experience, that people then can come back and get a PhD or a DSW in social work. And there they can go on to teach or to do research, et cetera. So it allows you a variety of different options. And here at Simmons, we have all of these possibilities. We have a undergraduate bachelor's program that is geared to women, because Simmons is a traditional women's undergraduate program. Our MSW program is men and women. And then we have a doctoral program. So it covers the gamut.
Mm-hmm. If a person has a degree, a bachelor's degree, in a different area, is it possible to still earn an MSW, or is there a curriculum they can follow to move in that direction if someone's changing fields?
If they have a bachelor's degree, and this happens to many people don't have a bachelor's in social work. And so people come in with a variety of undergraduate degrees, and it's your graduate training that really helps to introduce you to the tenets of the profession and the core values, as well as the skills that are necessary. Social workers, for example, here at Simmons, our students are in class 2 days a week intensively. This is a very rigorous program. And then they're in the field, what we refer to as in the field, which means they are in host sites. They're in community settings where they are working with clients so that they might be in community health centers or housing authorities or a variety of settings of that type, hospitals, where they're being supervised by someone who is a licensed social work professional to hone their craft. And that's really the way it gets done. And different programs do it with a slightly different model. Smith, for example, Smith College School of Social Work, does a very intensive model where their students are placed in the field in their host sites 5 days a week during the fall and spring, and then they do their academic work in the summer. So at this very moment, Smith students are in classes, taking classes intensively. But the traditional model is the one I talked about that we do here at Simmons.
Okay. I think that's helpful for people to get a little bit of an idea what the academic situation is, because some people like to know before they make a shift or a move in some direction to find out if it's even possible to do it. If you mentioned licensure, how is that? What is that for a what's a licensed social worker?
A licensed social worker, a licensure here in the Commonwealth is about 25 years old. And licensure really speaks to one's ability to do certain things. So a licensed certified social worker, an LCSW, LSW, a licensed social worker, is kind of an entry level. The LCSW would be the licensure that is held after taking an exam that is held by a recent graduate of a school of social work here in the Commonwealth. Now, there's licensure in every state, but every state does it slightly differently. So one would have to really investigate the rules of that state's licensing board. And then the penultimate license is the LICSW, the Licensed Independent Clinical Social Worker, which means that you've had the prerequisite numbers of years in the field, that you have passed the exam, that you have undergone rigorous supervision, but most importantly, that you have really gotten your practice skills underneath you, and then you're able to practice independently. And many people with an LICSW very often might go into private practice and be private practitioners or psychotherapists or that such.
Okay, all right. That helps to clarify some of the process that one might do. So as you said when we started, there are many ways a person could be a social worker using various skill sets and in various levels of academia and practical, you know, real life. So I think some people might want to look into it as a way of seeing whether that might suit their next career needs, or it might be for someone who's already been through a school process or what have you, or thinking about going back to school. It might be an area that, you know, speaks to a person on a second or third or fifth career.
Exactly.
There are ways and ways to do that. You also use a lot of your social working skills, I would imagine, in some of your community outreach and in other professional association outreach. How do you decide which places to visit or go, or is there a method to where you'll go to work with groups of people in the social work area or other social work professionals?
Well, for me, my commitment has always been to social justice and social inclusion. And so I try to make sure that I use my time in places that are promoting positive social change. I think you raise a very good point. That I always say that I never turn off my social work brain. It's a 24/7, 365, 24-hour a day brain where one is always assessing what's going on around you. So that I might be in a meeting, I sit on numbers of boards, et cetera, that to some of your listeners might look as if it has nothing to do with what I've been trained to do. But when I sit in those meetings, I'm really assessing the dynamics that are going on. I'm looking at the interactions between people. I'm assessing who has power, who wants what, how to move the agenda forward. And so it's a set of skills that I have found to be very helpful, because social work training is really about understanding people. And there are very few things that I can think of in this world that really doesn't involve some form of human interaction. And I can say pretty confidently that my social work training has served me well, and I think has helped me to contribute to the broader local community, national community, and also the international community as well.
Well, I think you might have to start the tagline change a little bit to say, you might be a social worker if... as you're listing the things that you're looking for in a meeting, these are the things that I, as a business wonk, I'm looking for as a business person. Who's in charge of the meeting? Why are they in charge of the meeting? What are they doing here? How do the other people feel about it? What are the other dynamics that are happening here that might affect the outcome for this group? So, you know, that might be a whole new sideline for you. You might be a social worker.
Yes,
you can
exactly.
use that for free.
Exactly.
Will you share a story from your past, or if you want to tie it to another person, where you can see how your work has helped others?
Well, I think that I can think of one of a former client of mine who had challenging relationships with her family. A lot of it having to do with her sense of not belonging. Because of her relationship with her mother. Now, understand that this was someone I was working with who was in her 80s. And as we did the work, and I began to understand that, in effect, she was not allowing herself to participate in the lives of her children and grandchildren, as we really unpacked it, this was a woman who had never really felt wanted by her own mother for a variety of reasons that I really won't go into, because it could help to identify the person. But as we began working together, and she was able to see the linkages between her past and how that was informing her present, and that she was in control of what was happening now, that her mother, in effect, what we worked on was to help her perhaps to be able to see that her mother had given her the best that she could, given who she was. And now she needed not to repeat that with her own child and grandchildren. And how could she begin to think about stopping the pattern so that she could move forward and be engaged in a way that was going to be more fulfilling? And she was able to do that with support and with help. Over time, and I'm very pleased to say that the end of her life was far more fulfilling than the earlier part of her life had been.
I think that's a tremendous story. I really appreciate your sharing, and that this person was willing to dig in, you know, in her 80s and try to unpack that, as you say, and sort it out. So she wasn't, in a way, carrying on the chain of abuse, if you will, or that she was able to make peace with the other, her children and grandchildren and what have you. I wish more people actually recognized that because you came here this way or you felt this way doesn't mean you have to stay that way. So I think that's a tremendous service that you did with helping this lady, this person, to sort themselves out so they could have a more productive or positive time. I wish more people sorted out earlier in their lives that you know, just because this was how you once were doesn't mean that you have to remain that way. Now, when you're working with people, how do social workers normally work, or one-on-one? Do they work in groups? How do these? You know, how do social workers? I'm sure there's a variety of them, but share a little bit about the varieties of ways social workers interact with clients.
Great question. It's both individual and via group, or some hybrid. So it might be that one is doing one-on-one counseling or couples counseling, for example, which I have done a great deal of, individual counseling, which would be referred to as one-on-one. There can also be group counseling, where the social worker acts as the facilitator of the group with people who have a certain set of characteristics or interests or needs or challenges or even diagnoses at times, and bringing those together. But it's also the way in which I operate more now than I have in the past is also going into organizations as a consultant to really look at systems and to help people to understand how to make their systems work better. Again, going back to the fact that systems are people. And I get called in a great deal to organizations from health centers to hospitals to any wide variety of systems to help people to really think about issues such as diversity, how to work with a staff to prepare them for a changing demographic that's occurring in their community. The two of my clients now, two of my large clients, have really wanted to make a commitment to looking at themselves as organizations so that they are better able to respond to the changing demographics of the communities in which they sit. And so that's required some work of going in and helping them to think about what will cultural competency as a goal look like for them. And working with the CEO, staff, and others. So it's a broad spectrum, and it's a very dynamic, continuously shifting environment in which we do our work.
Well, you tell people, assuming it's appropriate, when you tell people how, if someone hears this and thinks, ooh, that applies to me, how might someone find you?
They can reach me at Gary, G-A-R-Y, dot Bailey, B-A-I-L-E-Y, at Simmons, S-I-M-M-O-N-S, dot E-D-U. I seem to always be on email. That's the best way to find me and to then share with me what they're interested in, the kind of work that they might be interested in having me help them with, and we could take it from there.
Okay, thank you. Will you tell our listeners a little bit more about your personal journey as how do you, when you're working with people who are maybe in crisis or having a problem, how do you remain centered or calm or, you know, how do you take care of yourself? I find a lot of people who are in helping, supporting industries and careers. How do you stay so centered and focused yourself?
I think the most important thing, and I say this to all of our graduates, is to make sure that you have the best supervision possible. And that's really important to me, that I have the support of colleagues who one can have peer supervision, one can have direct supervision with a supervisor, one can have group supervision where you sit around together and talk about a case. Or cases or situation, and that's very important because you always, you're never so skilled that you don't need someone to bounce something off of, to think something through, to help you unlock the answer that you need, or more often than not, it's to help you form the right kind of question. I also find that my spirit and faith is very important to me. So that my faith community, I'm a proud member of Union United Methodist Church in the South End, and that on Sundays and the other times that I'm involved with my church is so important to me as a way of helping me to be centered and to really kind of replenish my well, if you will. I think one of the great challenges that people perceive of social workers is that it must be so draining. Well, it can be, but it's so important to also understand that we've been trained to also put a little bit of distance between the problem of our client and not taking that problem on as our own. my mother used to say that when she would talk about not owning someone else's problem, she would say she didn't have a nickel in that quarter. And as I get older, I understand that. That I don't have a nickel in that quarter.
The older we get,
that's
the smarter
mama wisdom.
Yes, mama wisdom. Very, very important.
And
I think it's,
that helped to put some distance. That helps to put some distance because it really isn't my issue. Not that I don't have them, but the client's issue is not my issue. And to really create that separation and create boundaries that ensure that I'm available to help the client as fully as I can, but not that the client is looking over at me thinking, my goodness, I have to help take care of my therapist.
I think a lot of folks don't really understand the field that you're talking about. So I really appreciate your sharing a little bit more about the importance of supervision and being able to talk with other people and share in a professional way. So I mean, not like names or exchange or anything like that, but to say, okay, here's the situation I'm in. Being able to articulate it in the professional setting and to have somebody else have a different, totally different perspective on what happened and be able to walk your way through the process is something that's very important. And usually in all counseling fields, it should be practiced. And it can be important to know whether someone that you're discussing this with has additional resources or additional supervision because you don't want them focused on other things. You want them to have a professional background and support system that allows them to be the best they can with you. So that might be a question, you know, that one might want to ask. And that's something I wanted to talk a little bit about is how if someone was looking for a social worker or looking for a counselor, how does one determine who would be a good fit for that?
Well, it would depend on what the issue is because we're not all good at in many ways, we're like physicians, so that one would not go to a cardiologist for a brain tumor. So, for example, I can help people or have helped people who need to have a referral for an eating disorder. That's not my field of practice. But there are people out in the community who are very skilled with that, or trauma. There are people who have immersed themselves in trauma work and who are some of the best that there are. And you have to really know what your boundaries are and what your skill set is. And and we're all human beings, so there are going to be certain types of situations or certain types of clients that will interest may not be the right word, but where we might end up seeing that over the years our practice has become more inclined towards certain types of population. And so it's to know when to make a referral to someone else who is the best at what they do.
I have that discussion myself with people. And sometimes someone will call me and they'll say, well, don't you do this? And I'll say, no, I actually don't. But I know another hypnotist or I know another therapist who can help you.
Right.
But I like you. I understand you like me, but I'm not, like you say, I really appreciate your sharing that you don't see, you know, the cardiologist for a brain tumor. So you have somebody whose specialization is in a different area, that it's okay to, you might, a person who is looking around for a social worker or a therapist might have to make a few phone calls or get a referral to another place. We have just a couple of minutes, a little over a minute left. Can you, just for a moment, tell us what you've learned over your 30-year career? Give us just a little snippet of something you wish you'd known when you were Gary starting out just out of college, something you wish you'd known then that you know now.
That the world is always changing, it's unpredictable, and that I would have the skills necessary, that I always had what I needed. I just had to hone those skills to make them the best that they could be. For many, many years, I doubted my own talent, my own ability. And once I got into the groove of trusting that I really did have skills, it was a much easier process. There are times when I look back over some of my work. I can think of a client who was grieving the loss of her mother, again, another elderly woman, And as a young social worker, I didn't quite understand that. I was sympathetic but not empathetic. Well, it was only after I lost my mother and that I understood. And that woman pops in my head periodically where I'll think, I now understand what she was going through. There are some things that you just don't get over.
Mm-hmm.
And that young me didn't know that. This current me does know that.
Well,
and
thank you, Gary, for being on the show. We're about to five more seconds left. So I want to thank Gary Bailey for being on the program today for a fascinating, just quick snapshot of what social workers do. Thank you very much, Gary, for being on the program.
Thank you. Bye-bye.